Side 18, it's still the 16th of January. We're with Walter Jacob. Do you have the dates, by any chance, of when you went from two rabbis back to three rabbis? When this occurred, the congregation enlarged again, and you needed more rabbis, made the decision. Do you have any idea when that occurred?
Yes, we had three rabbis until about 1978, and then went to two. But the program kept expanding anyway. It didn't really make any difference. When I became vice president of the Central Conference, there was some feeling that maybe we ought to have a third rabbi. When I became president of the Central Conference, there was still some feeling that we ought to have a preferred rabbi, because I was out of town a great deal, and so was Rabbi Stateman, because he was working for Soviet Jewry. So there were frequent periods when there was only one of us here, one or the other. The main thing that suffered were not the educational programs. You know, those kept going, the services kept going, we just worked a little harder. But the pastoral ended, because there just weren't enough hours to make the kind of calls on shut-ins or even hospital visits, for that matter. So, in my last year as president of the Central Conference, we ended up with a third rabbi. By that time, it was really hardly necessary anymore.
That was Rabbi Pine.
Yes. No, it was necessary, but not for the reason of spelling us, one of us, while we were out of town. And then we she, of course, has added a different dimension as a woman, and able to create specific programs for women, and also has done a lot with teenagers.
She did the Tiny Talk.
Yes, and that she started with her. You know, we could not start additional services with just two rabbis, but with her we started that. And when Rabbi Bush came 2 years later, and we engaged him because it's foolish for a congregation of this size to have a rapid turnover of rabbis.
Yes, that was discussed on the last.
Okay. So then we. Added further programming and also a lot of pastoral efforts, and really try now, and you need certainly three rabbis to do that, to try to cover the people who are ill and who are shut in and who are in mourning. Last week I think there were five funerals, and, so you really scurry around.
Sure. Now, you mentioned also that one of the rabbis, Rabbi Pine, and then Rabbi Bush, who are married, one of them receives three-quarters of a salary and one gets the full salary. Could you tell us which one gets the full and which one?
No, that's just, they just share that.
Okay.
It's just an arrangement which was so at the beginning, it is no longer so.
Oh, it is not. Okay.
No.
So they both get a full salary.
Yeah, I think that was just so the first year.
Okay.
when we were trying to work with the budget.
All right. Okay, you also mentioned about the acceptance of the Jew that is now was in Germany in the 50s, which from what little bit I know, I think that there is some difficulty now with the Jews in Germany who were there in the 50s and who are now there in the 90s. You mentioned it on the last tape.
I don't know what you're talking about.
That there was some
social... No. What has happened?
Lack of acceptance.
Mm,
all right,
no,
well then,
no,
would you like to talk about this?
No, that's... German, that's... Now we're going down a whole different track, if that's all right. One of the things I decided to do a couple of years ago.
Now I'm completing something that you mentioned on the last tape. That's why.
This makes, I'm afraid, no sense.
Okay.
In your question, because German Jews have no problems in Germany. You may be referring, I don't really know to what you might be referring. No idea.
You remembered it too, because we talked about it.
I didn't listen to the tape again, that tape.
No, it wasn't on the tape. It was one of the last things that you mentioned. I wanted to ask you something, and it sounded, why are you laughing?
That's all right.
This sounds like a funny question, but I'm going to ask it. I got to be nice and ask it over for a second. Did Dr. Freehoff come out for anything very strong in your time that you knew him as a rabbi, that he came out making some very strong statements, or if any?
That wasn't his nature. There were some issues he felt strongly about, and one, for example, that dealt with I think I mentioned that, with the life of the congregation, when there were some people in an anti-Zionist mode in the 40s who said, we do not want Hebrew taught in the congregation. Dr. Freehoff came to a religious school committee meeting, and I'm sure he very rarely, if ever, attended such a meeting, and simply said, as long as I'm rabbi here, we will teach Hebrew. And that was the end of that discussion.
Okay, that was the breakup, all right.
But on other matters, on political issues of the day, he, like civil rights, for example, or in the early stages on Zionism, he did not take a strong stand, and because it was his nature really to try to find a middle path and find some pattern of compromise, and he did that successfully with lots of things within the Central Conference of American Rabbis, and certainly also in these kinds of things. So there was just a different approach to matters. You have to take a stand when you write responsa. So certainly on all those issues, you have to come to an answer. It's no use giving people the facts and saying, you decide. They asked you to decide.
And what is it? How does he do that?
Sure, he make a decision. And
you mentioned Marty Faberman. Is there anything you can tell us about him his name comes up?
Okay, Marty Faberman, among other people, was very helpful when we were putting together Horizon Poems, and he was in the furniture business at that point. So he was helpful in getting furniture, very good furniture at a very reasonable price at his cost. And lots of other people were too. Were really extremely helpful in this, either politically or directly with furnishing the place.
Okay. And then Murray Levine.
Yes, Murray Levine was very influential right from the beginning, because he took an interest when we were just talking about the whole thing.
He took you to Connecticut, right? Yeah.
Well, we knew that there was a good sort of an arrangement in Connecticut, and we indicated that Irene and I, and one or two other people, that we'd like to do that. And so he saw this in a larger frame and said, look, why don't we book a whole group, and you try to arrange a schedule for us up there, and let's put together a group of people who are like-minded or who can be converted to this cause, and get them all to go. So he saw this in a larger framework, and he was very, very helpful in many other ways. For example, in looking at houses, would they be suitable? Not so much from a technical point of view, but were they okay structurally, and how expensive would changes be, and that kind of thing. And then also was helpful in the endless zoning and political battles with the Russians.
And what was his vocation? There were I think two or three Murray Levines in the community.
This Murray Levine was an architect and a developer, and by the way also had a strong interest, lifelong interest in archaeology, biblical archaeology, had been on some digs as a young man, and always was very much concerned with what was happening. We were good personal friends too.
You speak of the past tense.
He died 2 years ago in his, I think it was 90 or 91. Comes from a long line of family.
My goodness, Edison. You spoke about a restaurant going broke at the time that you were looking for equipment for Horizon, where you evidently got most of the equipment. The name of the restaurant? Do you remember?
I have no idea.
Okay. All right. Okay, you mentioned Irene Shamowitz and your Irene, your wife Irene, you, and a fourth person.
It's Helen Shamowitz, first of all.
Oh, okay. And could you tell us a little bit about Helen?
Helen Shamowitz, who was at that point married to a neurologist and a child, a specialist in child psychiatry, and who had dealt, so he had dealt professionally with lots of individuals with difficulties, and they also had some children with severe difficulties. So they were very interested, and she particularly very supportive. And many times, and I still have to get the name of, there was one other person
in
that early stage, I can't tell you that name. Many times, we'd meet regularly, and although there were more people involved, only the four of us would really be there and make decisions.
Okay, Gabi, from the notes that I have for today, I think the response, are you satisfied with?
I found satisfied.
All right, now, do you have anything that you'd like to?
For today, I have lots of other things.
That's the thing. I'd say 15 minutes. I would like your opinion on, there's some very pertinent things going on at this point in our country and in our, since you've mentioned social changes within the congregation, and that you're very practical, etc., and need to be, evidently. What are your views on gay marriages?
We have a gay and lesbian congregation that meets here, and they meet once a month. Most of the individuals, possibly almost all, also belong to another congregation. That's one of the groups that meets here now. Another group that meets here, that meets on Friday night, is a Reconstructionist synagogue that meets on Saturday morning. Either in one of the smaller rooms, or when they have a bar bat mitzvah in the Levy Hall. So you may have two simultaneous bar bat mitzvahs in the building. And as we've lent them our quarters, and they also have occasional other session, adult education session or something like that here. These are the only individuals that conduct services here. We've got lots of other groups, I think I've mentioned them, social action groups, so to speak, who meet here, like the Alcoholics Anonymous, the Overeaters. For many years we had a Boy Scout and a Girl Scout group. They more or less disbanded some time back. Then we are host also to lots of groups that only meet occasionally.
So you don't want to give me
a... Just a minute. You asked me off the tape something else, so I want to do that first. So lots of groups that are interreligious or that simply deal with social problems. The East End Cooperative Ministries often has meetings here, Race and Religion Council and other such groups. Now, to get to your question about homosexual marriages, I think that my feeling is that homosexuals may live together, do whatever they wish. I have no problems with that. But that there is no need to call that a marriage. Nor is there, if they want to do something Jewish, invent something Jewish of their own, that's up to them. I think that some things ought to, some particular descriptions of a rite or so ought to be left with that as it has been through the ages. That's one feeling. The other is that I'm not so sure that we need, as Jews, always to go with the times, and that there are plenty of issues where we can say and should say no. I mean, the society around us may say okay to this, and may go along with it, may even applaud it, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we as Jews apply.
Define marriage.
The marriage is the union of two people of opposite sex who have come together. I'm looking at it in a very long term, for the purpose of establishing a family, usually with children. Leaving love out of this at the moment, because that may or may not exist. If a mutual respect exists, that has also worked through the ages. So that would be a very simple definition of marriage, for me at least.
Okay, so that automatically then makes a statement that if two people of the same sex want to be married officially, that doesn't even go under that definition, does it?
It would not under my definition. If they want to be together with some sort of a ritual that they want to invent, there's nothing that keeps anybody from inventing something. I would not call it marriage, and I wouldn't extend marriage in that direction. Other people feel differently about it, obviously.
Okay, does marriage have to be official? You mentioned earlier in response to some of the things that have come up about living together. Okay, let's say two people live together of the opposite sex.
Well, you see, the interesting thing about Judaism is that Judaism would recognize that as a marriage. Would not say that that's the preferred way, but if two people have sexual relations and are serious about it, then that can and should be considered a marriage.
And having children?
Well, even if they don't have children.
But if they have children, are they considered legitimate or illegitimate?
If two people who potentially can get married, in other words, they're not married to anybody else at that point, have children, the children are legitimate. There's never been any question about that.
So the word bastard does not occur then?
Yes, bastard is a the offspring of a union that could not occur, that should not occur. In other words, somebody who's married has an affair with somebody else, and then publicly says, this is not your child, it's so-and-so's child. Because if there's any doubt, the authorities would always go in the direction of, we declare this child legitimate. I think I gave you some examples earlier on a tape, but that there are some examples from the Cairo Geniza, I think I cited those, in which a person was off traveling to India. His wife had a child 10 months after he left. Simply said, this was a long incubation period.
So that's considered a bastard?
No, it's not considered a bastard. You see, they would bend the rules.
For the 10 months, okay.
Or if this, supposing this child appeared after 2 years, now what? You know, if you declare somebody a mamzer, they are really in a very difficult position. They're out of the community entirely. Well, what they try to do, if it was at all possible, is to say, he returned. Nobody knew it. Why wouldn't he declare himself? Because he hadn't made enough money to pay his debtors here. He didn't want to be attacked by his debtors. So he came back, he lived with his wife a couple of nights, and went back to India.
Sounds like the
but
Scarlet
that's
Letter.
That's not really the truth.
Hawthorne, that
is
sounds
that
like
okay?
The...
It's not the truth, but this wasn't
okay.
This was an effort to see to it that somebody was not declared a mamzer, because
that's
right. So it's really protecting the child. Which is
yes.
Exactly. That's a lovely thing. Yeah. So I'm thinking of the Scarlet Letter. That is so a bastard then is not necessarily a child. I mean, even though two people are not married, and it's not an adulterous union, the child is born, the child is legitimate.
That's correct.
And is that just in Judaism?
Well, I can't tell you that.
Is this part of a response?
This has been for always.
Always? Before
yes.
Before the 800s?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that has never been, and there are long Talmudic discussions on all of this too.
It's a very fine thing.
Well, try hard not to have the child labeled.
In a community. And is that a true thing in other religions or just in Judaism?
I don't know. I put it this way. I'm only an expert on Jewish bastards.
Well, I mean,
wonderful. I love it. That's a one. We really should end here. That is a wonderful, Walter. That'll make up for your not answering my question on euthanasia.
I think.
Huh? No, it really isn't. But I think we should.
Yeah,
we're pushing it.